Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a big down. Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian. 2 days in a row. Brian behind the glass. Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Just put up the Astros box score from yesterday, and the banner at the top says, La Playa awaits. Is that foreshadowing to...
He's chilling right now. He's in La Playa right now.
That's foreshadowing for the return of Yordan Alvarez. Probably not. A little bit of Yordan news. General manager of the Astros, Dana Brown, all with the quarterback, saying that he's swinging a bat. We knew that yesterday, but... Also guessed that we might see him before the All-Star break. We'll see. New information on Jeremy Pena. Perhaps the Astros were trying to lock him up earlier this season. A little bit of a timeline there. Cash him or trash him. And then Michael Schwab, the czar of Astros Twitter, will be joining us later as well. Also Fred VanVleet with a new contract as well. Starting with the Astros, though, good start to this tough series. Couple of first place teams, a rematch of the 2022 World Series. We thought we would see a pitching matchup, and we did. Ranger Suarez carries a no-hitter into the middle innings. Fromber does his thing. Ultimately, the Astros get the victory. What did you think of Fromber yesterday?
I thought he was great. I thought that the fact that we talked yesterday about how this key stretch of games right now, where you're going to be playing first place opponents and some really good competition between now and the All-Star break, could give you a pretty good barometer for the team to basically see where they are. And right off the top, we talked about the pitching matchups, and we knew this one was going to be kind of must-see TV, and neither pitcher let you down. I mean, they were battling, they were competing. You know, everything was like, this one play could make or break the game. I really thought that they screwed up after finally breaking up the no-hitter to put two on with nobody out, and you can't get a bunt down, and it looks like you squash a great opportunity to at least push one up, because I thought one run was going to do it. And the last guy on the planet that I thought was going to do it did it, but I thought Fromber completely did his job.
Yeah, that was a bit frustrating there with Dubon. Like, you're a I know you've been hitting some bombs lately out on the West Coast. I get that you're using Yordan's bat. You think you're a slugger, but you're a contact guy that can't get a bunt down in a big spot. That was very disappointing and frustrating.
But like you said, he's a contact guy. If you can't get the bunt down, slash. Like, if you're going to show the slash and then go to slap that ball, at least put the bat to the baseball.
You don't see a whole lot of slashing at the big league level.
You don't, but if you're going to do it, especially in that situation and how important it could be, at least make contact.
Yeah, that was a little bit. He did make contact at third base.
Well, that was after that. That was the double play ball after he swung and missed at the slash.
So you want to see a pullback swing away.
If he's going to pull back and slash, yeah, then drive it into the ground somewhere hard. And hopefully you can at least still advance the runner.
Some bad ball. Yeah. Some bad ball is what that at bat was. That was frustrating to see. But Fromber, I thought Fromber was – I actually didn't think Fromber was the Fromber that is great. I thought what we saw yesterday was kind of bulldog Fromber, like grind through a start Fromber, Houdini Fromber, get out of some tough spots Fromber. Like that wasn't a dominant Fromber Valdez effort. That wasn't Fromber punching out 12 with right. And that's not to say I need 12 strikeouts from Fromber Valdez. That's not the case. But whenever Fromber is dominant, Fromber doesn't allow any base runners. He'll have a 7-inning performance where two guys reach, where he has the command. He's getting ahead of counts. His stuff is nasty. He had 8 base runners on yesterday. He pitched around traffic the entire game, which this isn't a knock on Fromber. If anything, it's complimenting Fromber. On a night when I didn't think Fromber was at his absolute best, his dominant self, he still went 7 shutout innings against a good offense and a team that's in first place in the NL East. I thought that was like, we always criticize Fromber for like melting down and like having these blow ups. Last night was the type of game where Fromber would blow up in the past, where Fromber just he was able to escape these jams, get out of trouble, not his best night on the bump, and he still goes 7 shutout innings. I was proud of Fromber yesterday.
Yeah, the 4 walks was something to notice. And then the play that Paredes made, the way that they got out of that inning was, I don't want to say lucky, but that was a hell of a play on a bang-bang play to get out of that inning that way. And I think he took a big deep sigh of relief when he got that. But he just kept battling. So I give him credit because Suarez was dealing, and he's nasty.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I thought Blum's comparison of Suarez to Mike Hampton was pretty solid. I would have never thought of that because I don't see Suarez and like, okay, that's Mike Hampton. But Suarez doesn't throw like upper 90s. He lives on the corners. He's got excellent movement. His velo's not bad, but it's not like elite velo. I always like to see Fromber in his 3,000-plus RPM pitches, and it was up. Remember against Sacramento, it was down. He had like 7 or 8. Yesterday, he had 17. So it's like, okay, the stuff is there. But then he only had 3 swings and misses, and that's what's un-Fromber-like. That's why Fromber, in my mind, didn't, you know, have the dominant Fromber-like stuff that we've become accustomed to whenever he's really on. And you say, well, okay, well, why is that the case? Like, the spin's there, the velo's there. Why did he only get 3 swing and misses? And I think this goes to pitching behind in counts. Like, he was in a bunch of 1-0s, 2-0s, 2-1s, and whenever you're in those spots, you can't strike anybody out in a 1-0 count, 2-0 count, 2-1 count. And plus, Philly's pretty good at putting the ball in play. Mm-hmm. But to get through 7 shutout innings, not have the command, kind of pitching behind in counts as opposed to being ahead in counts, on the attack, pitching around a bunch of base runners, I thought was a fantastic performance for Fromber when he didn't have his A++ stuff. The bullpen had their A++ stuff, though. Brian Abreu, nasty in his 1 inning, 3 up, 3 down. Josh Hader, nasty in his 1 inning, 3 up, 3 down. Hader was so nasty last night that he had a dude swinging at his breaking ball, a back foot breaking ball, swing and miss that literally hit him in the foot. That's how nasty Josh Hader was last night.
There were some bad swings in that game and some pitches throughout. But, yeah, that one, and I saw you tweeted it, that was definitely embarrassing if you're the hitter. But it's good to see because they, not that they were big hiccups, but over the course of the road trip, Abreu and Hader weren't their tip-top self. They had a couple of hiccups but got through a lot of it. At the same time, to have them come back, settle back in, do what they did, and the way that they did it in a game where everything was so hyper-important was good to see.
Texture, that was gangsta Fromber. He put on his sunglasses after each inning. I didn't see him do that. But, no, I mean, he was really good. He was really good on a night that he didn't have his best. Like, that to me is a pitcher right there. You go 7 shutout innings against a first-place team in a division in baseball without getting the swing and miss, without having your top stuff. That's a performance that is very, very good. I thought the Easok play that you mentioned was the play of the game defensively. He threw that like C.J. Stroud, layered it over the shoulder of the runner. Wasn't a great tag by Yiner Diaz.
Well, I was a little worried about it.
I just don't think he's a high IQ guy. I'm sorry. I hate to say it. It's just an honest opinion. I give my honest opinions. I don't. After watching Yiner Diaz for as much as we've watched Yiner Diaz, I just don't think Yiner Diaz is a high IQ baseball player.
You think that he was worried about being called for blocking?
Not with the tag. I mean, he has the ball at that point.
Yeah, but I mean, again, like you're saying, especially if he's not the sharpest tool in the utensil in the drawer.
I didn't say that. I said baseball IQ.
I understand. I'm just saying, like, if the ball's coming in, a catcher is going to be worried about, I don't want to start blocking the plate too soon. But, boy, I thought it was dangerously close where he put that tag and how he did it.
I just don't understand why any baseball, and you see this all the time in baseball and it drives me nuts. I don't understand whenever you're the receiving end of a throw and you have the opportunity and plenty of opportunity to tag the runner that you go after the guy. It never makes sense to me. Why are you going
after the guy? Like, come and
you go after the base runner.
Oh.
Like, you go try to tag the base. He has to come to you, my
right.
guy.
Yeah.
You're at the base. You're
Just
at the plate.
Right,
just
right,
stay there.
Right,
he has yep. to come to you. And you see that all the time. Like, players will go at the base runner, and that's when a base runner can juke you, or that's when you lead to a high tag, and the slide can get underneath the tag. You don't have to go anywhere, man. You're at the base. You're at the dish. He has to come to you. And it was a high tag. Fortunately, it didn't matter. And the Astros win 1-0. You know what catches my attention, especially when Fromber's on the mound? And it really caught my attention yesterday with the amount of ground balls that Fromber got and the amount of double plays the Astros got in that game yesterday. They got a pair of double plays. Felt like more than that. I started to wonder to myself, where do Jeremy Peña and Mauricio Dubon rank amongst the best middle infielders in baseball? And Dubon doesn't play second base every day. They got Tuve still plays a few games there. He wasn't your everyday first baseman early in the year because you were seeing what you got with Brendan Rodgers. So Dubon hasn't played. He's only played like half of the season at second base whenever you look at it from an innings played point of view. And this actually, you can even tie in this, why did they move Jose Altuve to left field into this conversation? Mauricio Dubon and Jeremy Peña, when I'm watching that game yesterday, I'm like, is this the best defensive middle infield in baseball? I was wondering that aloud to myself. I was like, you know what, Branham? Is this the best defensive middle infield in the entire sport? And look, I don't watch the other teams in baseball. Like, I watch the Astros. I watch every Astro game. I don't watch much Major League Baseball if the Astros aren't playing. I might catch a Sunday night game. I might catch one of the national games. But or I might turn on the Yankees or Mariners because I'm standing watching in June, like whenever it's the seventh or eighth inning. But I'm not watching any of these teams like I watch the Astros. So there are some things that measure defense, like outs above average, baseball savant, defensive run saved. So I went to Savant and I looked up the outs above average and I just did the math. Shortstop, second base, pairing, where do they rank in all of baseball? Jeremy Peña and Mauricio Dubon, who's only played half the season at second base, based on outs above average on Baseball Savant, the fourth best defensive middle infield in all of baseball. And if Dubon had played the entire season there, they might be top two and maybe ain't two.
Huh. I'm trying to think of who would be above them. And I'm thinking first and foremost about shortstops that have range and are really, really good. But is Bobby Wood Jr., is Kansas City up there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't think the Dodgers should be up there because of
Betts has actually been pretty good at shortstop, but they're not. And it's not because of Betts. It's because whoever's played second base there doesn't have great. Now, what's interesting about Witt is Witt has 14 outs above average. Massey, who's placed the second base there for most games, has zero. So, oh. they're whenever you add their duo together, they're getting there strictly because of Bobby Witt.
Okay.
So, 14 outs above average for Witt, zero for Massey equals 14 total. The Astros are getting seven from Dubon. They're actually only getting three from Peña, although three from Peña is top 10. You would think it'd be higher, but it's not. But like the other two that are ahead of the Astros, aside from Kansas City, St. Louis, Mason Wynn, shout out Kingwood, livable
right.
Forest.
Yep.
He has 11 outs above average. Their second baseman, Gorman, has one. So like they're doing it because of Wynn. Atlanta, their shortstop, Allen, has 13 outs above average. Albies has negative two. So they're doing it because of their shortstop. So like if you go like true pairing and like both players playing, you know, pretty above average, Jeremy Peña and Dubon might be the best defensive middle infield in all of baseball.
How many did you say Dubon has?
Seven.
Wow.
He's tied for
That's
first in
lot,
baseball.
Yeah.
And the guy he's tied with has played more than double the innings there. The thing with Mauricio Dubon is he's an elite defensive second baseman. And people will be like, well, Jose Altuve's fine at second base. And he's, you know, he's holding water there. He's average. Okay, that's great that he's average there. But Mauricio Dubon is elite. Mauricio Dubon, you could argue, is the best defensive second baseman in the entire sport. So whenever you have Framber Valdez, who induces the amount of ground balls he does, when you have Hunter Brown, who induces the amount of ground balls that he has, you should be playing Dubon at second base and Altuve somewhere in the outfield or DHing. So this kind of, you know, circles back to the, you know, should Altuve play left field? I think it's more about Dubon and Peña being such a good defensive middle infield, though, especially behind Framber and Hunter Brown.
I think we take it a step further, too, and we talked about this to start the year when we were having the Altuve discussions, and that is that they put a premium on the defensive side of the baseball. The fact that they added a gold glove first baseman, and Paredes has been really, really, really good at third base, mm-hmm. that your entire infield is so solid now that wherever the ground balls go, you seem to think like they're going to make all the plays. Last night they did it again, and their defense seems to continue to step up. I keep going back to that play in the hole that Jeremy Peña made last week, the Jeter jump. But again, because people have tried to take shots at his defense in the past. But this defense is really, really good, and it starts, and you've mentioned all the time about Jake in center field. But for as bad as we were worried about certain areas of the defense, especially the corner outfields, boy, the infield has been really, really strong.
Yeah. You have to play Dubon at second base when Framber and Brown are pitching. He's so good there. He's so good defensively. And you put him and Peña together, and he's one of the top defensive middle infields in all of baseball. It truly is. Now, the hero, you didn't think we were going to bury this lead forever, did you? The hero in yesterday's game.
In the air, center field. Rojas going back near the wall. The ball's gone! Cooper Hummel! 1-0 Astros! Breaks the pitcher's duel here in the eighth.
TK didn't think it was gone. Off the bat, TK didn't think it was gone.
No, yeah, definitely the way he started. Yeah, there wasn't that level of excitement.
He didn't think it was. He was hoping that it would drop and get to the wall. Now, foolish me, there was a pitch. I can't remember if it was the pitch before or two pitches before, but it came high and tight to Hummel, and Hummel kind of like got out of the way.
He said lean into it.
Not only did I say, I tweeted it. I said, wear it. Wear it. But that Branham guy, he's a casual. We all know that. Yeah, the unlikeliest of heroes, Cooper Hummel, going dong over to right center field yesterday.
He had two hits last night, but I think for his career so far as an Astro, half of his hits have been home runs because he had the bat flip, and that was his first hit as an Astro. And I don't think he's had a hit since, and the two hits last night, maybe if he had one, then two of his three or four hits are home runs. Not the guy that I'm expecting to get power from in the outfield for the Houston Astros.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun with Cooper Hummel last night. He was fired up too, around the bases. Hummel because of that home run yesterday, because of a two hit game yesterday. He has worked his way into the lineup again today. Not only has he worked his way into the lineup again today, he is DHing today. Cooper Hummel, the power hitter that he is DHing today. Pena, Isak, Altuve gets a second base day because Colton Gordon's pitching, fly ball guy. Caratini catches Smith and Wright, Walker in the sixth spot again. Myers, who was the cleanup hitter yesterday, moving down to the seventh spot. Now you are facing a righty versus a lefty.
Good one,
Hummels
too.
The DH, and Taylor Trammell makes his Houston Astro debut.
Yeah. Who the f*** is that guy?
You know Taylor Trammell. Everybody knows Taylor Trammell.
Cooper Hummel has four hits on the season, two HRs.
Sheesh.
Just did not expect that for him. His career in the regular season, five HRs.
What's his career about? You have his numbers? What's his career average?
His career average is 164.
Texter said Dubon tried to turn a double play with two outs.
I mean, 164, otherwise known as better than Jose Abreu.
It's above the Abreu line.
OPS 563.
Above the Abreu.
Better than Jose career. Abreu last
this year right now, 920.
Do you remember Dubon trying to turn a double play?
I don't.
There was the one early in the game. I can't remember if it was first or second inning, where there was a runner at first, two outs, and Dubon played it up the middle, and all he had to do was step on the bag at second, and he took one step that way and then threw it to first. Now, I wonder I think that's the play he's talking about.
I do randomly remember that vaguely, but yeah, I don't remember him trying to turn two with two outs.
I think that's what he's talking about, which it was weird that Dubon didn't just go to the base there.
There's a lot of hiccups like that in baseball. Last night, particularly, there were two other ones where people thought that there were two outs.
But Dubon didn't lose track of the outs there because there were two outs, and instead of going to second and then throwing to first, he just threw it to first.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's some sort of defensive metric that, like, calculates your arm, and he's like, let me get an assist here.
You think so?
And Carlos Correa would chase war points.
Oh, for sure.
Openly talked about it. So, like,
he
would
did?
It shock? Yes.
He talked about it?
Yes.
I had never heard
yes.
that.
Yes. So, like, Mauricio Dubon, like, in a brief moment of thought, okay, I could step here on second base, or I could easily make the throw and add an assist to my stat line. Maybe there's some defensive metrics that, like, it helped you out. I could see that being the reason why. Because why else wouldn't he have went to second? It was an easy race. You'd have easily won it.
Yeah. You're right there. But, yeah, I didn't recall – that he was going to try to turn a double play with two outs. But, yeah, I do recall
it had to have been that play. It had to have been that play. All right, 713-780-ESPN. We'll collect your thoughts on the Astros game yesterday. Cash him or trash him a little bit later. The czar of Astro Twitter, Michael Schwab, will be joining us later as well. But new details are out with Jeremy Pena. Apparently the Astros tried to lock him up. Apparently they were down to the one-yard line with Jeremy Pena. Something happened. Jeremy Pena then hired Scott Boras. What to make of all of this? 713-780-ESPN, the HR&P listener line. We're on the YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can find us there. You can also find us on TikTok at ESPN975. I'm at Jeremy J. Branham on the TikTok. You can find us on Twitter as well at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man. Joel Bryan at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925. I know that you're looking to escape the rat race for the weekend, right? The hustle and bustle of the job, traffic, whatever's causing you stress. Of course you are, so I have the best idea for you to get away. It's Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Escape the city. Enjoy the relaxing great outdoors. Book that stay now at twocreekscrossingresort.com. Open green spaces, wildlife, beautiful, majestic trees, and some of the best fishing in Texas, whether it's on the Two Creeks, whether you're taking the kids to the catch and release pond they have there on site as well. You can't beat it. It's just 90 minutes from Houston, too. You can escape the city without traveling traveling too far at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. You're not going to waste your time on the highways. You're not going to have to go to the airport. No, you're there in 90 minutes. Piece of cake. Hike on their 92-acre property, kayak, pickleball. Just hang out by the pool with a drink. And Two Creeks Crossing Resort, always looking to take care of their visitors. We went there a few weeks ago, stayed in the treehouse. Branham family had a great time. They had food trucks out there Friday and Saturday. They had live music on a Saturday night. That was great as well. So get out there to Two Creeks Crossing Resort. Get away from the hustle and bustle. Get away from the city. Enjoy the great outdoors, from the glamping to the cabins. Pull up the RV. We stayed in the treehouse. You'll love that. The family will love that. They have the perfect stay for everybody. An incredible savings right now for the Hive. June and July, if you book five nights, you save 35% on top of it. So book that stay now, twocreekscrossingresort.com. That's twocreekscrossingresort.com.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Brandon.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Former Astro lefty, Jim DeShays. I wonder what he would think who's the greatest left-handed starter in Astros history. He'll be joining us Friday at 5. Of course, he does some marquee with Boog Shambi, you know, with the Cubs. Astros will be playing the Cubs. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. TK joins us at 4:30 on Friday. Then Michael Schwab, star of Astros Twitter, joins us at the top of the hour. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRNP listener line. Chris, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What is up, Chris?
What's going on, guys? Good afternoon. First of all, I'd like to say I really like the new app, the old one, Blue. This, the new one is really, really good. So congrats on the upgrade there. Last night felt like a playoff game. It was outstanding. Astros are definitely playing over their heads right now and doing a great job of it, and I hope it continues. As far as Fromber goes, I think last night showed that mentally he's gotten stronger, so he definitely needs to give his shrink a raise because I think he's getting a raise based on last night's performance. Because that's always been the question with Fromber is can he handle those situations? Because you're right. He played with traffic all night last night, and that leads me to my other observation, which was I'm really glad Altuve was DH last night, because if he was on second base, we probably would have lost the game. I mean, what a defensive game that was to watch. I like those kind of games as opposed to the high-scoring games. So that's all I got, guys. Great show as always.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate the call. I did feel that way. I think that was the first time all year that I can remember that I felt like, not that it was a playoff game, but you just felt the intensity kind of got ramped up last night because it was a pitcher's duel, and it was fun. I mean, I was coaching. I had to go back and watch it this morning, but we started out at like 7 o'clock, and all of a sudden I looked up at the TV, and it was like 8:30, and it was already in the middle of the sixth inning. I'm going, man, this thing is flying by.
Yeah, I agree with Chris. I'll take a 1-0 game over a 10-9 game every day, especially when I'm working that game. I don't know if I would say would you agree the Astros are overachieving, that they're playing over their heads?
I when he said it, the first thing I thought of, well, he must mean that because of all the injuries across the roster that they're overachieving. Because otherwise I would say that just from a team perspective of where they were favored to be what a top three or four team in the American League.
Yeah.
To where I would think that they're not from that perspective, but they definitely are based on the injuries and some of the lineups they put out there.
Yeah. And not to pick on Chris, this is more picking on the take that Fromber is like a mental midget. How? Like, I understand that he gets animated on the mound and like every now and then, like one game a year that, oh no, like there goes Fromber. Fromber Valdez, after last night's games, down to a 2.88 ERA. The last year was 2.91. The year prior was 3.45. The year prior was 2.82. The year prior was 3.14. I don't know where he's going to finish in Cy Young voting this year, but the last 3 years, he's top 10 Cy Young guy. Like, that's not inconsistent. In fact, it's the opposite. It's consistent. And do you know who holds the record for the most quality starts in a row in major league history, and not like a quality start, like whatever. Like, that's not the end-all, be-all. Yes, I'd rather have a quality start than not have a quality start. But I don't think a guy who racks up 25 quality starts in a row is an inconsistent starter. I think it's a false narrative, and I hate it.
No, I think, if I can't answer for Chris, but I think if we've talked about it too, it's more or less based on his fielding and when there's a bunt or a play to be made at first base where he kind of panics sometimes. You've never heard that take?
I've never heard that his fielding is the reason for his mental blowups.
Oh, my God. I would think that stoppages in the game and when he has to make plays and he throws the ball away or makes mistakes when he does that he becomes rattled, that stoppages in play seem to work against him, that umpires can work against him.
That's different than fielding, though.
I'm just saying overall it's not – what I'm basically saying is it's not related to his earned run average and his ability to be an outstanding pitcher in Major League Baseball. I think it's more related to when we see those kind of things happen when he kind of melts down in the moment.
Yeah, I've heard the take a lot that he's inconsistent and he has these Fromber meltdowns. And I'm not arguing that whenever he has an error that he starts to steam a little bit, he starts to get hot. But I've never heard that being the only reason that Fromber has these meltdowns. I've never heard that. Texter, Fromber's only shortcoming now is his defense, but that doesn't come into play all that often. Texter, he also pitched through two errors. Yeah, the Walker error. That was a tough error for Walker. That was a tough play, one that you would obviously like him to make. But I didn't think that was a routine play for Walker either.
Is it fair to say he hasn't been as good defensively as we expected him to be this year?
I think he's been pretty solid.
Yeah, he's had a couple of hiccups. But, yeah, I'm just asking if because of the fact that he comes in and everybody – we knew he was a three-time Gold Glove first baseman.
Yeah, I don't watch him play this year. I'm like, that guy's a Gold Glove. But I think he's been solid. But we've also had to experience Jose Abreu and John Singleton over right there, so it's a very, very low bar. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on your expectation. Like, I'm with you that he hasn't looked like a Gold Glove, and he won't be a Gold Glove, but it's been so much better. I think a lot of what he does, too, is kind of lost. Like, how many times is he helping you out with picks and scoops, kind of what Yuli Gurriel used to do? Like, he's saving a lot of the infielders at times errors. Like, it's not going to show up in the box score, but he's saving a lot of guys at times.
I was almost surprised on the double play ball that Altuve threw away the other day that I thought that he might get to that one because his footwork is really, really good around the base. And a lot of times he'll use the base to kind of trampoline and get off the base just to get the ball. So I was surprised when that one got by him the other day.
The one went over his head?
Yeah.
Yeah. The other error was the Isak error, the rare throw over the first baseman's head. Isak's usually solid. He doesn't make those.
He's had a really good year defensively. He's had a much better year than I expected defensively at third base.
Agree. Walker error was tough. It was smoked right at his feet. Yeah, it was like an in-between hop. It's a tough play. Fortunately, he didn't come back to bite him. Like, it didn't matter, which is great. Walker made an error in the previous Fromber start, too. I was like, man, Fromber must hate Walker.
Oh, that's the one. Yeah, where they bailed him out. Didn't they bail him out after that? They got a double play with runners in scoring position.
It's like a rocket to Isak, maybe?
Because I remember saying at the house, like, to the girls, he definitely – Christian Walker needs to go over and thank a whole bunch of people after that one because he definitely could have been responsible for a couple of runs.
Yeah, his less than stellar defense has been on display when his best pitcher's on the mound. Whoa, is that a hot take? Fromber, your best pitcher? Cool. I don't know if that's true. I just said it. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Let's get to the Pena news. Apparently, it was down to the one-yard line with the Houston Astros, and then all of a sudden, Pena's being represented by Scott Boras. What in the world went on? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So new details coming out with Jeremy Pena today. Timeline a little bit on perhaps the Astros were working on a contract with Jeremy Pena. John Heyman tweeting earlier today, Astros and star shortstop Jeremy Pena. Jose Altuve was right after all. Astros and star shortstop Jeremy Pena had been, operative word there, had been in serious long-term contract talks before his recent agent switch to Boris. As I said on MLB Network, those talks are now on hold, at least for now. Pena is second in Major League Baseball behind Aaron Judge with a 4.5 WAR. Ari Alexander adding to this. The Astros and shortstop Jeremy Pena were deep in contract extension discussions for a deal exceeding $105 million over 5 years, multiple sources tell KPRC2. Ari then in his article, the subheadline, Astros and Pena were deep in discussions. Actually, he's changed the subheadline. At one point, it said within the last, like, within the last few weeks. So it's weird he changed the subheadline on that. No, it does say that. Astros and Pena were deep in contract discussions in recent weeks on a deal in excess of blah, 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 blah.
Just my best guess speculation hearing that, first thing that I thought of when I heard that was, well, he canned the agent because they were close, and then he probably got feedback from outsiders. Very well could be other agents. It could be players. It could be both. But to say that he might be completely devaluing himself if he took that deal at that time, and then made an agent change because of it.
Yeah, that's kind of my read on the situation, too. Because the timeline's like, okay, let's try to play it out here. And I don't want to get too much into the, well, Dana Brown should have done this 18 months ago type of thing. Although I think you should err early than err late. This is an example of that. Like, look what happened in 3 months. Jeremy Pena went from, like, an average shortstop in baseball to one of the best shortstops in the game. Do it early. Even if it doesn't pan out, you still have a guy who's a baseline starter in Major League Baseball. But if we try to piece together the timelines, Ari saying that they came to him early in the 2025 season. They had conversations in recent weeks. The parameter is 105 for 5, which I actually think is kind of fair before this breakout. Mm-hmm. Like, if Pena was producing right now what he had done in the regular season in each of the last 3 years, I actually think that figure is fine. Like, people might look at the figure and be like, oh, those Astros, they're trying to, you know, pull one over on Pena. No, I think that's a pretty fair offer before Pena's breakout that he's had. He's not the all-star here yet.
No, that goes back to the conversation we were having yesterday. Just because they're talking about an extension, it doesn't have to be at the top dollar, mm-hmm. the top value of shortstops. When you think about it, is he Bobby Witt Jr.? No. Is he some of the guys that have gotten paid or overpaid at the top end, whether it be for performance or just a great deal like Xander Bogaerts, who now plays all over the place? No. So that's kind of where I was thinking as well was, okay, well, what's the market then? And what are you valuing yourself at that they didn't? Because I would bet in the timeline that this started well before he got this hot and kept it going for this long.
Because
didn't they start at the start of the season?
Yeah, the Ari's article says they approached him at the beginning, like towards the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
So this is before he developed into the Jeremy Pena all-star that we know today. That's why it's not fair to say that the Astros, like, you know, it's a bad offer.
Exactly.
No, at start of the year, 105 for 5 is fine, is fair. And it also says it exceeds it, too. So, like, start of the year where he was in his, you know, big league career, back at baseball card, I think it was a contract that was fair. So that was happening early in the year. Ari says it's been happening within the recent weeks. We find out earlier this week that Pena has moved on from his previous agent, which was Beverly Hills, like, Corporation or something. Never heard of them. They do represent a few baseball players. I went and looked at some of their clients, but no one that's, like, you know, crazy. I'm with you. I believe that Pena is like, okay, 105 for 5. I'm playing at this level now. I don't think so. So, like, let me go out now, hire Scott Boris. I don't think it's great for the Astros. I'm not going to say that it closes the book on a contract extension. It's just going to make a potential contract extension way more expensive.
That was my thinking, was the fact that regardless of whatever the background and history is of his previous agent, he basically knows the one guy that's probably not going to let any stone be unturned and try and get every penny that he can get for him and know all the kind of fine details that we're talking about with other shortstops and comparisons and age and statistics and everything else would be Boris. And he's seen it happen for a bevy of his former teammates and current teammates, because he's seen it from Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve and Lance McCullers and all these other guys Garrett Cole, other guys like that. So he knows that if he has any questions or if he's questioning what they're doing and how they're going about it, the easiest thing he can do is just go to the guy that's known around all of baseball as the guy that's going to be the guy that delivers the hammer.
Yeah. So whenever, before they hired Boris, where were you at in percentage chances the Astros would sign Pena to an extension?
I thought that eventually they would get there because I didn't expect this offensive outbreak from him, mm-hmm. and to have it continue to go to this as long as it's gone so far and be this consistent. So I think that I felt like, you know, he wanted to be here. He really likes it here, the culture, the way he's accepted, the way the organization is. I just felt like at a certain point they could get a deal done with Peña because I didn't think he was going to try and break the bank. I didn't think he was going to try and get like top of not only all shortstops, but maybe top salaries in baseball.
Yeah.
And so now it's a little bit more worrisome.
So where would you have the percentage before the Boris news?
Before the Boris news, probably 65%.
Where do you have it after the Boris news? Yesterday?
45%. 40%.
Okay, I'm probably a little bit more pessimistic than you, but same ballpark. And then where are you now after the Heyman and Ari news, the reports?
I would say that now I am, if I'm the Astros, I'm going to wait. I have no reason to do this with where he currently is, that they're going to want to see more. And then depending on how he does it, I would say it's probably at 25%.
Okay. See, I'm a little bit unmoved by today's news. I was probably at 50-50 before Boris. The Boris news probably pushed me down to about 25. Mm-hmm. And even after today's news, I think it's 25. I think I'm unmoved by today's news. Because actually, like, what do we know now that we didn't know yesterday? We know that they've been talking. So perhaps it's far enough down the road to where Peña's now hiring Boris to, like, okay, squeeze a, you know, $10 million. Yeah. Yeah, like, let me dot the I's, cross the T's, maybe get a player option or two. Boris is great at that. Let me squeeze an extra $10, $15 million out of them, but ultimately get a contract done. Because yesterday, we didn't know that they were in negotiations at any point this season. So I actually kind of find that a little encouraging.
Yeah, because now, going back to our conversation of yesterday, now it kind of leads you to ask the question, is he the only one? Were they talking to guys like Yiner? Were they talking to some of the younger players to see if there are other guys that behind the scenes with no publicity needed, hey, we're quietly trying to see what we can do to kind of do what we were questioning Dana Brown about yesterday, that maybe he was taking some of his best young players and seeing how many he could wrap up before it got way too far down the line. Because now I think from an Astros perspective, I hope it's just Boris takes it over the finish line and you can still get a deal done. My thinking now is because of the success he's having this season and because from an Astros perspective, knowing Boris may come in and say, let's start over, and he's going to probably start at a much higher figure, that the Astros might say, okay, let's ride this out a little bit. Let's table this because I got to see if he's going to be this consistent going through the rest of this season and beyond.
Now, Brome did, in one of his articles, I think it was Monday, say that the Astros have not approached Hunter Brown about any sort of negotiation. And he also said that Hunter Brown was open to it in the past. I think that was before he went on his tear last year.
Right.
I think it was in the offseason 2 years ago. I do have an optimistic viewpoint and a pessimistic viewpoint from a Dana Brown perspective when it comes to this. I'll tell you next. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN Radio.
With it into second, one on to first, and it's a double play. The Tigers do it again.
Sitting high atop the American League, the Detroit Tigers face Carlos Correa and the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah! Home run, Correa! Wow!
Game coverage begins Sunday at 5 with first pitch at 6 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
My optimistic viewpoint from a Dana Brown perspective is, oh, okay, he is negotiating with these young players. I was a bit critical towards him yesterday. He said that he was going to lock up players just like they did in Atlanta whenever he was early on the job. And he did it for one. But Tucker left in free agency. I wouldn't call Bregman young when he took over and already had signed an extension with the Astros once upon a time. He's probably missed the window with Brown. I thought he missed the window with Peña, but apparently they're working on it, so that's good news. Yiner hadn't been done, maybe could be done. Who else am I missing here? Cam. Yeah, it might be. Most people would say it's still too early on Cam.
Right.
I think Hunter I'm in the Brown. Minority there. I think I mentioned him.
Who'd you say?
Did you?
I think I did, but maybe not. He said Hunter Brown.
Oh. Yeah, you know, you said Brian.
So like there's been some opportunities to lock players up, and it's been very, very quiet. Now, maybe he's doing it and it just hasn't been reported, and I'm cool with that. Like, that's fine. This is a bit of evidence that he is trying to lock up a younger player, club control, years spot out in free agency. That's my optimistic view looking at this from a Dana Brown angle. My pessimistic view is, yeah, but you didn't get it done. Yeah, but you didn't get it done. And now, even if you do get it done, even if you do accomplish it over the next month, 2 months, 3 months, before next year, because it's taking you this long to do, now you have the biggest shark in the game, Scott Boras, representing Jeremy Peña. And if you get it done, massive if, it's going to cost you way more money. So it's good that he's having the negotiations. It is bad that he didn't get it across the finish line.
But is it his fault? Because
I think so,
because
yeah.
Because if you think about it, it might have been that Peña just was uneasy or ticked off at his representation, and that Dana was doing his job and they were progressing. So he figured that he was doing what he said he was going to do, and that he thought he was going to wrap up a piece to this team going forward long term. And then, much to his chagrin, Jeremy Peña wasn't happy with the numbers or whatever. For whatever reason, he makes this change, and I don't know that it was. I don't know if it was in Dana's control.
Maybe, but how do you get a deal done? By making a deal get done.
But at the same time, if he feels like it's progressing and he's doing everything from his end to facilitate it getting done, he probably is believing that we should be hearing back from them and that we're in a good spot, only to find out, hey, by the way, I'm changing representation. Scott's coming in. We're, you know, he'll get back to you.
In my mind, if you blow Jeremy Peña away with an offer, he never goes after Scott Boras.
If you blow him away, but I think that part
that's
of
where he's at fault. Part of the he didn't blow him away. He tried to nickel and dime him to the point, in your theory, we don't know if this is the case, right. But in the theory and the scenario you just pointed out, Jeremy Peña, I'm not going to go as far to say insulted. Jeremy Peña didn't like the offer enough to sign it, in your scenario, didn't like the offer enough to sign it, that he then fired his representatives and hired Scott Boras. So in your scenario, you're borderline insulting Jeremy Peña.
Oh, I'm worried about that.
Right, so that's not good. That's bad. Like, how would you defend Dana Brown in that scenario?
Because Dana Brown, if he's not getting pushback from representation or Jeremy, if he's not hearing that they're offended by this, if he's not getting any feedback that says they're not liking any of the way this is going, and the way it's described that it was more kind of well down the road, then if I'm Dana, no news is good news. If we keep negotiating, and I think it's progressing, then I'm not going to sit there and call up and go, you know what, I'm going to throw an extra $5 million on that deal.
Sure. Yeah, you shouldn't just do that just to do it. I see your point. I think it's a valid point. But you could also point to the timeline of it as well. Why did you wait until the start of this season and not in the offseason? So, like, the timeline there is a little bit fuzzy as well. Texture, you sound crazy, I emoji. It's Israel. Dana's the guy doing a great job. Overall, I've been pleased with Dana Brown. I won't push back on that, Israel. I would like him to err on the side of being earlier to contract extensions for young foundational players, like he said he was going to do, though. Texter, it wasn't until Peña started playing an elite level that Peña hired an elite agent. Bad news for the Astros. I do think that it's ultimately bad news. It might not be the end of a contract talks. It might not even lead to Jeremy Peña not signing an extension. I still think that's in play. I still think it's possible. I still think it's out there. But the moment that you hire Scott Boras, it became a lot more expensive.
Yeah, I just think this is similar to when we were talking about the Cam Smith situation, about whether they should have brought him up when they did or not. The end result is you're probably going to pay at least $10 to $20 million more on the back end if he continues to progress. In this similar situation, you're talking about wherever you were from $105 million or whatever it was in that ballpark range, you're probably going to end up tacking on $10 to $20 million, if not more, in this deal, because one, you're bringing in Boras, and two, from the time you started this negotiation to the way Peña's playing this season, that if you continue this right now, then you have, if you're the agent and the player, you have no choice, but, and you're going to sit there and say, hey, we want more top of the market money because he's playing his tail off.
Yeah, he's been playing really well. Peña's massively helped a team win a World Series. I don't blame him for wanting to shoot a lot higher. As a Stros fan, I want him on a reasonable contract, but I don't blame him at all if that was his thought process. Yeah, I don't blame the player going after money either. 409, Josh, didn't Boris cost Correa money? I don't think so. I think Correa's body cost Correa exactly. money.
Yeah, his injury history and what was showing up on physical exams and things had teams concerned, and I don't think that had anything to do with anything other than that.
Correa's also signed some very lucrative contracts. Whether he then failed his physical and didn't get the lucrative contract or the Minnesota contracts both times. Like, Carlos Correa, I don't think he's lost money because he's represented by Scott Boras. Correa in his career has made $166 million.
And he's still got a big chunk on the table with Minnesota, right?
Yes, he's got 32 next year, 31, 31 the following 2 years, and then he has team options that actually de-escalate, 25, 20, 15, 10. But he's made a lot of money. I think Boras has done good for Carlos Correa.
He's got 150 on the table. He's going to have a hell of a career financially.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit different, like a lot of money, and did you cost him money? I don't think that he cost Correa money.
No, and I think we saw the teams that were interested, San Francisco, the Mets. The Twins just kind of tried to, on the backside, catch a situation where maybe they can knock some of the millions off of it and get a guy that they wanted to stay relevant with, as opposed to when the Giants and the Mets were willing to throw a bag at him.
Yeah, and to the bad news for the Astros, like, this doesn't change my theory on things either. I believe in signing a player early, a foundational player early, to a team-friendly deal. If they don't sign the team-friendly deal, okay, that's fine. We have a backup plan for that. You know what that backup plan is? Kyle Tucker. We'll trade the player before he leaves for nothing and get a really good return and then just continue the cycle of building onto the machine.
And I think along those lines, while you're doing that, you're also probably drafting a potential replacement as well.
That's a little difficult to do when you're drafting at the end of the first round, and I don't think that Major League Baseball drafts, you're drafting for need. Like, you're just drafting a really good player.
But I'm saying, if you know that you're going to be losing a player and you don't know what you're going to get back if you do the Kyle Tucker route, you're probably still going to groom someone or get someone in the system that has the potential, at least short term, to be a replacement.
I think it's very difficult to do with Major League Baseball draft when you're drafting in the 20s.
Okay, and I, you know, again, from year to year, where the draft position is going to change, but I just think that, you know, we're talking about from a lot of other positions too, who's your second baseman of the future, who's this, who's that. I think as a general manager, unless you have just like a blatant need, right, at a position where you're really, really weak, I would think that you're probably still trying to find a player that you know down the line, we're probably not going to have that player. I'm probably going to, as well as explore the free agency trade options, I'm probably going to get someone in my system.
Yeah, I agree to disagree on that. I think Major League Baseball general managers more draft just the best player they possibly can. There are certain general managers that have philosophy towards certain things. Like, I think Dana Brown likes college bats. And then look at, like, Bryce Matthews. Bryce Matthews was a shortstop in college. He's not a shortstop professionally in the big league level. So it's very difficult to do, in my opinion. Just a thought, with Altuve publicly calling out Astros front office to extend Pena, maybe Pena went to Altuve for advice, and Altuve told him that Boras would get it done with Houston. Obviously, Pena has to want to be here for that to be the case, but it is a possibility. I would agree that it's a possibility. I would say that that is the optimistic viewpoint. Like, if you really want Pena long-term, like, that is the viewpoint that you hope is reality. And I like the texture said, I wouldn't completely throw that out.
I would think that, to me, the first thing that is a no-brainer is that Pena talked up to Altuve about being represented by Scott Boras.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, Altuve has signed some team-friendly deals. Lance McCullers did too. Yes, he has the reputation of being a shark, but he's going to do what the client wants him to do. A texture, any reason Pena couldn't get Soto money? Soto is kind of mid at best for a few years now, other than his contract year with the Yankees. No.
No chance.
There is no chance that Jeremy Pena is going to get 15 years, $765 million. 15 years, $750 million is out of the question with Jeremy Pena. A lot of this, too, is when they enter the free agency market. Like, Juan Soto is 26 years old, so he entered free agency going into his age 26 season. Jeremy Pena is going to be, what, 30? He's going to be going into his year 30 season. So Pena is going to be a little bit older whenever he hits free agency, which is going to hurt his overall value. You can look at that from a positive outlook for the Astros. Like, okay, well, he knows that he's not going to be getting this massive contract because he's going to be a little bit older as a free agent. But you could also look at that from a negative outlook, like it's going to be the only one chance opportunity to cash in massively. Because if you start to punt those free agent years, okay, well, you know, now he's going to be 33 when he's a free agent for the first time, 34 when he's a free agent for the first time. It might lose overall earnings in his career.
Yeah, I think when you look at it, too, the Astros track record has said they're not in it for 10-year deals, 15-year deals, massive, massive deals. And that's not something that they're going to be open to. I think we even with the Bregman conversations, we were going, would they go as far as six? And age matters. I totally understand that. But I just don't think that it's the Astros' philosophy in negotiated contracts to go with that 10, 15-year deal.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, he's not going to – Crane would never do that. Like, from both sides, it would never be possible. Blaine, my first thought was more in line with Blanker's. Worries me they insulted Pena and he got rid of his agent. See, I wouldn't go as far to say insult. It's more like, I don't think this is my true value. But maybe it is insult. That's the range here. Who knows? Corey, I'd say Boris cost Keuchel money. I think that's a good call. Yep. Can someone tell me what Soto got? Yeah, we just mentioned like almost $750 million. What was it, 765 for 15?
15, yeah.
Yeah, and he's much, much younger. This texture says his career batting average is 10 points higher than Pena. Okay, well, that's ignoring how often he gets on base, and that's completely ignoring his slug. Like, you can't be basing contract values on batting averages, or Luis Arraez would be the highest-paid player in all of baseball.
Yeah, no, I think that's humorous to say that you're going to compare Juan Soto to Jeremy Pena and think that they're going to come close salaries, both AAV for a year or for the totality of a contract.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to Schwabby, Michael Schwab, the czar of Astros Twitter. I wonder what he thinks. He's always hashtag pay the man. He believes in paying everybody that has been a free agent for the Houston Astros. I wonder where he's at on this Jeremy Pena news, and what are his thoughts on the Astros in 2025 and them being inevitable? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Subscribe to ESPN Houston for free on YouTube.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to take an adventure with rugged capability and commanding style. Check out the Honda Ridgeline, Pilot, Passport, or CRV. For a limited time, well-qualified buyers can get a 1.99% APR on a 2025 Ridgeline or a 3.99% APR on a 2025 Pilot, 2026 Passport, or 2025 CRV.
See dealer for financing details.